Hi, I'm Christina Crowley-Arkley. I'm a Canadian dairy farmer's daughter, strategic marketing and communications entrepreneur, and your host for Country Guides podcast series. With renewed focus on your farm, your conversation, I sat down with farmers across Canada to talk about their stories of success and failure, what keeps them going every day, and how they're positioning themselves and their farm for generations to come. All right, let's get into it. Cody, thanks so much for joining us. So excited to have the conversation with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so give the audience and the listeners a bit of a background on whereabouts in Ontario do you farm? What do you farm? What do you do?
So we're in between kind of Kitchener and Guelph and Cambridge and Waterloo, kind of like that sweet rural spot in between it all.
Yeah.
And we started out when I was a kid. We had beef cattle and we had some pigs as well. And then through high school, we kind of realized that to keep going, we'd have to either upscale or just get rid of it.
Yep.
So we started looking at how much money we spent on feed and the time investment. And when we looked at it that way, it's like, okay, we're spending all this stuff. Instead of putting all of our corn into feed, if we sold it, that, and you know, we don't have any animals with vet bills or anything. Once we do that, we could kind of, you know, alleviate doing chores, which was nice. and then we expanded and we're doing more custom work now. So we have our own combine, we have a self-propelled sprayer, and we do our own tillage and seed drill, that kind of stuff. So we're pretty much just cash croppers at this point.
Yeah.
We also do maple syrup. That's been something that's been through, I think it's 5 or 6 generations now. And then we just traditionally do just a bit of firewood because we have to clean up the bushes for the maple syrup.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of the operation there. Myself, I kind of went a different career path. It was actually kind of nice how my dad set it up. There was never pressure to get into the farming business. It was just kind of always there. So you grow up, you always do the stuff. I mean, I just got married in June.
Yeah,
So my dad, thanks. During his speech, he reminded me how I took out the corner of the shed with the with the disc and in front of the 200 guests and everything. And it's just like, yeah, you know. But then you think back, it's like, oh, geez, I had to get in for a confirmation class, which I was in grade 6, so
yeah.
Grade 6, I mean, I was 10 years old, you know, and I'm driving this giant trad, you know, and he kind of had it coming, so.
Learning some really good life skills at a very young age. Just won't tell MTO or anyone wants to know
we were in
licenses.
A field, so.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I did that, and then ended up actually becoming a licensed mechanic, so I didn't really go the farming route, but I worked night shifts, so I remember baling hay before work, and then you worked at 3 a.m., so it worked that way, and then I actually moved over to England for 2 years, because again, you know, the farm was always there, it'll never go anywhere.
Yeah,
and then
live a little, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then I went over there, and after my 2-year visa was up, I came home, and even when I came home to visit, I just worked on the farm naturally, and that's where I kind of realized, hey, you know, this is unique, it's cool, and not everyone gets the opportunity, so when I came back, I was a little bit worried because, you know, what if I don't want to do this? I'm putting all my eggs in a basket. So I actually got my Bachelor of Education.
Good
so I went and now I'm an automotive teacher. So I have all those things going for me. So I teach part-time at a high school close by. So I teach the very first class in the morning for automotive because of my license.
Yeah.
And so then I'm home every day at 10 a.m. and like change ready to work and stuff. So yeah, it kind of takes a bit from the morning, but then, you know, that alleviates the financial stress and stuff. So,
yeah. And where'd you go to school for your Bachelor of Education?
Brock University.
Nice. Close by. And
yeah, they have a campus in Hamilton. So it's kind of a blended thing. They went fully online since COVID, obviously.
Yeah.
But even back then, we did a lot of it online, and then we'd have to like go into class for like 8 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of our spectrum of how things go.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's you and your dad home full-time on the farm.
Yeah. We get some, like, we work closely. My dad grew up working for his dad. So then my uncle and his kind of family, we work together a lot. So they'll have the trucks, we'll have the combine, they'll have this, we'll have that. So we work closely together and we help each other out as much.
Yeah.
But we are kind of separate businesses now. They had to branch off at some point. So.
Yeah, yeah. So would you say because of your background then, I mean, and I'm glad to hear that you went and did what you did in terms of leaving the farm, you know, and then coming back. And I feel like that's a kind of a common theme for young people like yourself. A lot more people are doing that. They're going out knowing that the farm's there. The parents are, you know, there's not as much pressure necessarily as maybe what there was for our dads where they, you know, had to come back right out of high school or maybe even dropped out of high school, right?
Post-secondary
education was not an option. And so at least you went and did that to know that the decisions you made, it sounds like you're very grateful that you went that route and that you ended up where you are back at home.
Yeah, like it's really interesting. You'll go somewhere, I don't even know, I've been to Russia and St. Petersburg, and you just meet these random people and you start just naturally talking about your interests and stuff. And one common theme was maple syrup. Everyone found it so interesting, right? So Canadian that I'd be wearing a plaid shirt just by chance. Like, oh, yeah. Look at you. I was like, yeah. This. And then and you just start realizing you're talking over, and it's like you're actually talking about your own passions. Like, yeah. When you leave somewhere, you can be whoever you want to be. And if you end up being the exact same person talking about your – you start realizing more about yourself from yourself in a weird way. So,
yeah, from those experiences.
Yeah, so that's where, it just clicked. It's like, hey, you know, this is really cool. And, like, obviously no one can just wake up and say, I'm going to be a farmer for the rest of my life. It's a big commitment. So having that opportunity, it just seemed kind of natural. And I could see my dad could use help. He's getting older. And, I've always liked the family farm. So
do you think, like, when you were traveling abroad, is that when people, when you start talking naturally about being Canadian, when they asked you, where are you from? You maybe were in your plaid shirt. Mm-hmm. And then is that something that naturally people were like, oh, Canadian maple syrup? Like, is that something people mostly start talking about?
Yeah. And it's funny because I remember being in Stockholm, Sweden on a walking tour, and they were talking about this company, and they're like, oh, and they have real Canadian maple syrup in there.
And I was like, oh, why, what really? Other option is there?
Well, we make it back home. They're like, oh, really? And then we went in, and she said, you see, is this a good price? And it was 60 euros per liter. Right now, we just finally put our prices up after like 5 years to $20 a liter. So I was like, yeah, it's actually a lot kind of cheaper at home than like, oh, that's great. So yeah, they were just, and it almost turned into me running a tour compared to like the tour guide and just as interested. So it was really cool that way.
Why do you think people are so fascinated with Canadian maple syrup? I mean, I feel like I myself, as a person involved in agriculture, like, I find the sector fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just so, it is so localized that you can't, like, you can travel a bunch of places. There's only a few places that actually make maple syrup.
Yeah.
So it's, for them, like, we did tours last year, and, like, some of the people that live in Waterloo, like, literally a stone's throw away, have never heard or seen this, and they find it so cool. And even me telling them, I still find it cool. I don't know. It's just natural in your blood thing for Canadian, but
I mean, to be honest, I'm surprised that Ontario does. Like, so how many taps do you guys have at the farm?
So we again work with my uncle. Yeah. So this coming year we are going to be up around 12,000 combined with everyone who brings it.
Yeah.
So it's starting. Yeah. Well, my dad might have mentioned last year we won the Elmira Maple Syrup Festival's competition.
No way.
Yeah. So there was a tasting.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a big feat. So there was there's always a competition for the best tasting syrup. They get the Royal Winter Fair judges in to taste it. And and there was, like, they said it was the most applicants ever that had it, and it was the first time we ever kind of entered, because we were always kind of so busy, and it's like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let's try it. People think it's good, so so we put it in, and we won. So
no way.
We had people come out. I forget what the original question was.
Well, just about Canadian maple syrup and like why it's so revered around the world. I mean, I guess, and I'm also surprised too, because Ontario, we're not necessarily known for growing maple syrup. Everyone naturally thinks of Quebec. I believe like 80% of Canadian maple syrup is grown in Quebec. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of taps that you guys have here in Ontario. But why do you think it is such a luxury product? Like, why do you think people around the world, when they're tourists, they come to Toronto and they got to get that little bottle of maple syrup? Like, what is it?
I don't know. It tastes good.
Better than Aunt Jemima.
It is such a, like, Canada is so nature revered, and this is their piece of they realize it's such a crazy craft to make. You can mess it up a lot, like, pretty easily. So to have a good bottle, and it represents and tastes good. Like, we at the syrup festival, we actually sell for like 75 cents, because it was my idea. Like, you go to these festivals, whenever you go, it's always like, okay, here's a hamburger for $10. Yeah. Here's this, but it's overpriced. Like, it's not necessarily overpriced. You're paying for the experience.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, a kid can't come here with a dollar and buy anything. Like, let's give him a shot of maple syrup at least. So we put it up for 75 cents. We have random people all the time. They get all their buddies. Some drinking guys come. They'll have like 10 people, and they're like, oh yeah, and they'll shot it. We have had some people come back like 10 times for just shots of maple syrup. So yeah, it's just one of those things. I mean, it tastes good, and I don't know. It is such a Canadian thing.
Because you're growing, so you're producing maple syrup, you're growing your cash crops, and it's two completely different experiences, because your cash crops, you know, it's out of your control in terms of who you sell it to, markets, you know, and then, but yet you're direct to consumer with your maple syrup.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this may be something that you're very passionate about, like that you love this side of the farming.
Yeah, I would say I'm not directly responsible for our success in the maple syrup by any means, but when COVID hit, that was kind of the wake-up call, because we used to sell bulk pretty much. So there's a company, Jakeman's Maple Products, they sell world round, and they just constantly buy. So that was our thing. You know, you fill the barrels, you send it off, you sell maybe $1,000 out the door, you go to the surf festival, another $1,000 or $2,000, and that was our year.
Yeah.
But when COVID hit, we called up Jakeman's, and they're naturally in the tourism industry, and said, you know what? Tourism's kind of dead. I don't need any syrup. And we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
We're sitting with like 30K worth of syrup in our thing. We're like, well, what do we do? So I just said, well, you know, it sucks, but we could just deliver it to people. You're not allowed to leave. So we could just spend our days delivering syrup.
Yeah.
And that started.
It gives you a great hobby while you were had nothing else
to
do.
Yeah. So we're
right?
like the Canadian Amazon, like runner up. And we thought we'd go through like a barrel of syrup. But then in the first bit, like it really, like during COVID, we just advertised on Facebook Marketplace and it really started to snowball. People liked this. People were buying like, you know, direct from farms and like doing this curbside pickup. So we ended up selling like a couple barrels, and it was like, holy cow. So we adopted it, and it was a really big change for not just me, but my parents, because I decided, you know, with Amazon, everything, you almost have to offer free delivery. Like it's one of those things where people are just expecting it these days, and you can either change with everybody or you can get left behind. So we're not big enough to ship or anything. So we've actually integrated, me and my wife mostly do it. Every Sunday morning, we just do a little tour.
Drive around.
We get our groceries at the same time, all of our errands.
Way.
So it's part of our kind of lives. And like the people that you meet as well. Like, I mean, the funniest story is we had this family of four. It was a 9 and a 7-year-old, two kids, and they were having their family over for breakfast the next day. So they bought a big 4-liter jug of syrup, you know, because they were visiting from Ohio or something. And they messaged us the next day, like, hey, you're not any chance in our area this morning. We're like, is there anything wrong? Like, is the syrup okay? Like, oh, the syrup's fantastic. Problem is, we woke up in the middle of the night to our kids with coffee cups of it, drinking it like solid.
No.
And she's like, and the 4 liter's gone. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like, are they okay? She's like, oh, the one puked. there's a lot of sugar.
We need more.
Yeah, but we need more because the family's still coming. So so it's cool. Like,
a treat for them, right? Like, they had a lot of sweet things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you connect with the community too. Like, it is that one of those things that it's cool that, like, you can go beyond the farm gate thing and actually say, yeah, I know that person, you know. And then some of them add you on Facebook, so you see their feats, or they all of a sudden, you know, get married or something. So next time you just drop off, you give them a little like thank you, like appreciate being an awesome customer and stuff. So
as you're wearing your Snyder's Acres sweater,
this is new.
Assuming it's promotion for the brand, the Snyder's Acres
a little bit
syrup.
It was just I only have other company sweaters. I'm like, you know, when I'm delivering and it shows another farm, it's just like, it kind of gives them, oh, are you from, you know, Rosendale Farms we deal with, oh, are you from Rosendale? It's like, actually, no, we're Snyder Acres. So
good so for you for repping the brand. I mean, how much do you think that has changed from generation to generation of like how that is the relationship we used to have with consumers, was selling directly to them, those relationships. Obviously our food system has changed a lot in the last number of decades, but also it feels like there's this shift, and you get to experience it every Sunday when you're driving around, of these consumers now wanting this relationship with their farmer.
Definitely.
Do you think that's a trend, or do you think it's here to stay? Like, what do you think?
I think people, maybe COVID woke people up to realizing, like, we way back, even like you say, 2 generations ago, there was a lot of what they call horse trading. Like, we've always done it with Garlic King at the Surf Festival. We give them some syrup, they give us their garlic product, and it's like, yeehaw, like, yes. And it's just something so satisfying about knowing the people that grow the garlic. And through my travels, when we go through Europe, there's still the traditional bakery, there's still the deli shop, and you go and get your produce here, and they still have that, and that is very ingrained. So maybe with the immigration as well, that I must say it has come, because we have a lot of those international that are first-time Canadians that are coming, and they just love that interaction. And it is cool, because I think we've been so distanced for that thing that COVID kind of almost, it's weird, COVID spread us way apart, and now we're way closer together.
Yeah, like, in certain ways,
when we first started doing our tours, people, like, they filled up so quickly, and it's like, holy cow, like, But we had to limit it as well, because COVID's still a risk. My grandfather's 89, and he still helps out, so we wanted to limit it to the people. But it was so cool. So it is cool to, after COVID, to actually put a face to the name as well, instead of just always delivering to Jen here or Calvin, you know. So,
and I was gonna say, like, it sounds like it was an idea that came out of necessity, but it actually, you know, worked really well. And then it sounds like you're not getting rid of it. You know, how open was your dad and your uncle and like the family to the idea? Because I mean, I feel like you're an example of someone who's a young farmer who is, thinking very worldly, globally, lots of different perspectives. It sounds like you're very like open and curious to learning. How do you bring those ideas back to the farm then and not be met with resistance? Because that's
so, you have
normal
to pick your day. you don't always lead with good or bad news. You always have to kind of make it just like, we want another gator, and my dad took it his. So it's just like, I waited till a couple of days until he still said no, but you just let it roll.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, if I'm honest, my mom was right against the free delivery. No, we're not doing this. You know how much gas is and stuff. I'm like, and even now, the summer months slow down. So sometimes we only have like 3 or 4 deliveries on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And there's one here, one there, and it's a 20-minute drive. but I also have my motorcycle license. I'm like, oh, this gives me an excuse to actually drive because I never get to because we're always so busy. So I've actually enjoyed that part of it.
It's another way to integrate like your way of living too.
Get some of these hobbies actually in because it's so easy to just fall into work being your hobby. And I've talked to other self-employed people and they're very, very much so that you need a work-life balance and it's really hard for that to be a farmer.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where you almost like the way I looked at it when I came home from England to work with my dad is, okay, you're running the farm. Instead of saying, okay, yeah, pay me, I had to come up with ideas to make him money to afford me to be at home because I don't want to impose. Was like, okay, now you're going to retire 10 years later because I'm working with you. This was one of those ways that now I would say we're very close to me making enough money that actually pays for me to like the wages that I get. It's really cool that way. And then the farm can keep doing what it, like I'm unaffected. If anything, we're growing.
It sounds like you're very well-rounded too in terms of like you teach obviously school in the morning, like you said. So you get that perspective with your students. You're doing maple syrup direct to consumer. So and it sounds like you travel quite a bit, I don't know if a lot of farmers in Canada can say that.
No, I am a black sheep. That's for sure. Where our family farm is, my grandfather, he gave me the, my dad has a cousin who looked into it. And our family farm is about 3 kilometers away from where the very first settlers in the 1800s are buried.
No way.
That's where their family farm is. They came over and had 10,000 acres.
And where did they come over from?
They were Dutch they were German. Sailed over from Rotterdam down to Pennsylvania. And then the next generation came up to the Snyder's Flats in Bloomingdale. Then even they were, it's kind of funny. Like I'd like to think, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And this kind of gives me that little fill. And then I've always wanted to teach, so that gets me that. They had their pasture and everything, but it was nice, close to a river. So they built up these little cottages and charged people money for picnicking. And it's just like, and you kind of see that. The next one started up a sawmill because everyone was building log houses and stuff. So it's cool to see kind of like your own tendencies in your heritage as well.
I love that you use the word entrepreneur because I don't think a lot of farmers, if you said to them, you're an entrepreneur, because almost it's like a buzzword right now. It used to be back in the 70s, if you said you're an entrepreneur, people shunned you, they looked down upon it.
Yeah, definitely.
But that is what our farmers are. You are entrepreneurs. And do you think that that's a way to, again, maybe entice and attract some younger people to the sector, say you get to be an entrepreneur, you can sell maple syrup directly to consumers if you want?
I definitely think so. There's right now that I think Cambridge, I think that's the township that's fighting it, but they wanted chickens in their backyard because, COVID, people were making banana bread. They started wanting to do things for
sourdough
themselves.
Sourdough and all that.
So people are wanting to have chickens, and then, obviously the smell and then obviously if you don't want a chicken, you just let it go and it goes. So I think more and more people like that kind of lifestyle. And I actually took additional qualifications and courses for teaching, and I have my green industries all the way up to grade 12. So if our school eventually does grow the program, there's specialist programs, and one of them's in agriculture. So I'm really hoping eventually our school gets to that point, and I can just go to school, teach farm, and go home and farm. It would be awesome. And the programs, I know Waterloo, Oxford, they have a really good one, and there's another farmer there. He tries to do everything, but he says, it's tough sometimes. But it's one of those things where you have to find your own balance. Farming's really cool that way. You can, if you really like sheep, You can become a sheep farmer if you want. If you're already in the farming world, you can specialize. My interests don't necessarily align with my father's, but we both respect what areas we want to. You might have heard from him, he really likes snowmobiling. So we have a tractor that does the groomer and all that stuff. Being a mechanic, I put the tracks on. Then he goes and grooms if he needs me, that's fine. But then during the winter, I do my own thing. So I go and market our maple syrup and the honey, and there's Christmas markets and stuff. So it's cool that we have the opportunity to work together, but then have our own kind of passions.
We're also that generation where it sounds like our generation with our parents and us, we have different complementary skill sets, if you will. We can, the things that they're good at, then we can go do other things. The things that, we want them to be good at, we leave it like that, and then we go and get new hobbies and passion, same thing. I mean, I guess I'm going to put it in the spot here a little bit with teaching agriculture one day. Do we need more farmers in Canada? Is that is producing more food our problem? Or is it going to be finding talent in other areas of the food system we need?
That is the best question that has no proper answer. And it's a very good one to talk about because is it more people, or is the production gotten so mass produced that you need less people? There's more automation. But then when the automation hits in, I have a good friend that's here today that's an electrician. He says, man, this stuff here is more advanced than the stuff I'm putting into like tech buildings. And it's like, yeah, it's coming. And he's like,
yeah.
When it breaks, who do you guys get? And it's like, that's a good question.
Yeah.
So
should be you. You need to set
yeah, so yeah. It's all hand in hand. Like the more people you need, the more food. But the more food you need, the more feed. The more feed you need, the more land. Not necessarily farmers, but you do need the land. And yes, I feel like our generation, my generation at least, yes, they want to farm, but it's very sparse that they want to jump in 100%.
Yeah.
Even myself, I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I teach in the mornings and that's my safety net. But
but a lot of farmers have to do that now.
That's the thing. For me, it's for me to even think and try to take over the farm. Yeah. I need like the way that we have it structured is my teaching money actually is my bills and that pays for everything. And then the farm, whatever I get paid there is literally paying for it. So I make my living from, you know, 8:15 to 9:30 every morning, and that's how I live.
Yeah.
And you have to be frugal with your money or else you're never going to make. I can't go out and buy a new truck unless it's like supplied by me or I won a contest.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think you become a farmer to be profitable.
No, exactly.
Like,
you're asset rich, but even my grandpa, you know, his 30-inch TV, tube TV just broke. And I mean, I was a kid when he bought it and it just broke. So I got one on Black Friday. So I sent it over and he went from a 30-inch tube TV to a 55-inch like
flat screen.
Yeah, like at night you can see his whole bedroom's lit up. Like it's so funny.
Yeah.
But I don't know if more people, but there definitely has to be more of a focus on getting younger people involved. Yeah. Even, you know, one full-time farmer, if you had three part-time farmers, I think the three would be almost better because they come with fresh ideas and aspects like you were talking about.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe they're not at the point where, I've just been doing this for all day, so I need a rest, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because injuries are also a thing. Like with farming, it's funny. You sit in a tractor for so long, and then when you get out, you're expected to literally be Hercules and smash a rock out of two discs and then go and sit forever.
Yeah.
But you need that strength for that one minute. So that's actually really hard on your body. Whereas, you know, if you're always doing stuff, it's a bit different.
Does it excite you, I guess, for the future of Canadian agriculture that there's people like yourself, like this young generation of new way of thinking that's coming up, like ready to fail, ready to try new things? Just open-minded about how we approach farming.
Yeah, I'm personally scared for our future with farming.
Okay.
I love to be optimistic, but I just started getting comfortable with how much stuff costs and how much you sell this and that for, and then COVID happened, and now it's more the machinery that scares me.
Yeah, yeah,
because
the cost of it.
I'm a mechanic. I come from that realm, so I know parts. Being a mechanic, I get like a 40% discount. That's how shops make their money.
Yeah.
But like the automotive world, for example, before COVID, we were around $100 an hour for labor. Now the dealerships are somewhere over $160 for like Honda dealership, a very common brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And the tractor dealerships and everything have followed suit. So not only does it cost a lot for the equipment, but it also costs a crazy amount to maintain it.
Yeah.
So that's where I look at it. And, you know, I'll be really happy. I'll sell like $2,000 worth of syrup in a week. And I'll be, oh my God, this is the best. Yeah. I have made so much money.
Yeah.
And then we just had a tractor that had a tiny leak from a gasket. The gasket's $40. It costs us $8,500 to fix.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there goes my $2,000 that I worked so hard. I was so happy. Yeah. And it's just like, you can't expect that. So then the alternative is you get new equipment. Well, the new equipment is crazy
expensive.
So then I'm sitting here with my little teaching pot of money, and there's no way I could even touch any of the equipment without the farming and that stuff as the background as a safety net. But then it's just like, seems like you're always working and working, working just to pay those bills. And then you get to expand a little bit, but I mean, you see your giant, your giant spreadsheet with all of your incomes from all the seeds. And then you see the other bills and it's like, wow, are we aligning?
The economics
here?
Of farming it's hard.
Yeah. So then, but then the way like we were talking about it the other day, it's like, yeah, well, sure, you can make no profit, but your land appreciates. So it's like, okay, so you can literally farm at a net loss for your entire life, but then when you sell the property, you make the money. But then you're out of the property, and you're next
can't
of,
farm.
You're next of kin. Yeah. So that's where I'm a bit scared because especially in our little pocket, like the.
You guys are sitting on prime agricultural land.
The cities, I can now see for the first time in my life. I'm living on the home farm, a high rise that's lit up every night. And that wasn't there the last 25 years.
Yeah.
So I can see it coming, and it's just like, okay, then what do you do? So you finally sell, and you have all this money. You either reinvest into farming, or you just tail it out. Yeah. So,
do you think that's one thing that I feel like our parents' generation was never open to was moving, right? Like you didn't, when you set up shop 6-8 generations
you
ago,
where you're buried there. You were Dutton Farm, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like you didn't, and whereas I feel like there have been a number of young farmers I've saw that have been willing again to do that and move across the province, move to a different province to set up shop, to be I guess, farm in an area where maybe the land isn't as good.
Yeah, you'd feel a little bit more rewarding with the financial, the economics, like you say.
Yeah, so, but it's easier said than done. It's easier to tell someone like yourself, like, oh, you just sell your prime egg land and then move to a different province and go try to farm there, right?
Yeah,
try to do maple syrup in a different province that doesn't have maple trees.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you have, like, that's the main thing. My wife is from England. I met her there. I could have very easily stayed there, but I said, no, I have the farm, my family and friends at home. If I wanted to farm and do that, I would have maybe done it in England. But then again, you can't just become a farmer. So it's like you kind of have to play by the rules. And once you get to the point where you can move, you also have to think of the other loved ones that have helped you get you where you are. Like if we establish friends and say the kids have all these, you know, great relationships with all these people in school and you just all of a sudden hike them over to there. Are they really going? Are they supportive of your decision? Is it your dream or is it their dream? Or are they going to resent you and never take over the farm? So there's so much at play. That's the thing that is a little bit, not, I shouldn't say scary, but it gives you anxiety because it's like there's so many decisions. What if it's the wrong one that I make? So
it sounds like for all the great things that are happening in our sector, like technology and innovation and efficiency, you're growing crops that we've never grown before.
Yeah,
and it's doing amazing. There also are a number of things that we've never had to deal with before as a generation of farmers and agricultural professionals that will be really interesting to see how we apply our mindset to where we're going to go in the next 25, 50 years. I mean, that's why sometimes I like to think we could make, it'd be cool to put us all in a room and make some pretty bold predictions about where we're going to be 50 years from now and see what actually comes true and also what we decide to respond to and what we decide to like really create or, you know, design that farming life. What's the best piece of advice you've gotten from anyone? It can be your dad, it can be anyone, but what's a piece of life advice that you've been like, that was instrumental leading me where I am today?
It's likely to come from my dad. It was really interesting. Like one thing I've been really good at with my traveling experience is to just don't walk in thinking you're the smartest person ever. Like, I mean, being a mechanic, I've been a mechanic since 2010. I know how to fix stuff. Like, that's fine. So we'll be working on some equipment and I'll be, I know this through and through. And my dad, like, oh, you got to do it this way. It's like, well, dad, you know, I'm a professional here. I have a license.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, this person who just has their high school education way back in like the 80s.
Yeah.
Actually, they got married in 83, so end of the 70s.
Yeah.
He has a trick that I've never seen before. And it's just like, interesting.
How did you know that?
And there's more and more. So as much as I know about technology, like with cars nowadays, you need to know, you know, your data line systems and how computers talk to each other. And it's been an asset. But just don't devalue someone else just because they're older. Like, and sure, you know, my dad's 63 now and I've been mechanic for so long, but he has literally been like these combines, he has seen them evolve and he knows, okay, yeah, this might be that, but it's because of the last two systems and they were terrible. And it's like, wow, I never would have known that. I'm coming in here, but I just look at it as a bearing. So the wealth of knowledge. Even my grandfather, he's like turning 90 in February.
Yeah.
He talks about maple syrup when he used horses to collect it. And it's just like, and then you start taking a step back and the wealth of knowledge that are in these old farmers, some people write them off as the most simple people ever. And it's just like, no way. What they are through, like they have been through some serious life challenging events and they've conquered it.
Yeah.
So,
but it also sounds like your dad and your grandfather's are example of people who, as they've aged and gotten the experience that they have, they haven't let go of that curiosity and that open-mindedness to, you know, be ready for Cody's idea. And that's probably not every farmer has that experience, right? Yeah. There's some times where there's a lot of conflict. Mm-hmm. And so it just sounds like you guys have a very complementary way of doing work in life because you guys are very willing to accept each other's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, capitalize on your strengths, your dad's strengths, and be open to learning and listening together, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, it hasn't always been roses, with any family business. But when I was deciding to go to England, I still remember it vivid because it's one of those memories. You remember my grandpa saying, why are you going over there? There's plenty of work to do here. And it's like, that. Now that I'm home, I would have the same opinion. Like, holy cow, like there's work always. You just pick which one you like doing. That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah.
But it did take me that far to go out there to get this drive to come home and want to do this and like be proud of the family business and stuff. Yeah. So it's
Where do you think Snyder Acres is going to be? I won't put you on the spot for 50 years from now. It's too long. But, 5, 10 years from now. What do you hope to be doing? Where do you hope to be?
Well,
how many taps are you going to be doing by then?
It's really funny. So we just toured Jakeman's maple products and everything, and they have this giant, they're the first big packing facility in Ontario. So they're really proud to be a part of them and helping them. And I turned to my dad, I said, you know, if I had three of me, this is what we would maybe be doing. We just laughed. But I really don't know. I always tell myself, I've actually been thinking about this for the last like month or so. I always have a 1, 3, and a 5 year goal.
Smart.
And the one was to, you know, come home and develop, you know, my roots in farming and then get my bachelor of education, get a job where I literally teach just the morning so it doesn't affect anything else. Yeah. And then the last one, obviously get married on the family farm, which is really special to us. And I never really looked much past that besides, okay, now we get going. But 10 years from now, like where me and my wife are starting to think about kids maybe the next
family,
year or two. So I think I have an undiagnosed ADHD part of me. So one of it's always continually learning, and I'm hoping the children aspect is the next part.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It'd be nice to get a little bit more help. That would be the thing.
Hire someone, yeah.
Yeah, not even necessarily hire, just have a little bit more of a cohesive thing. Like with the maple syrup, having everyone pitch in instead of me just having the idea and having to kind of train everyone.
Yeah.
Having other people have ideas. Like my little sister now wants to make maple candies. And I'm like, yes, someone else get in here, you know? And she's like, I like mowing lawn. I'm like, yes, there's so much lawn to mow.
Yeah.
And she likes bringing in bales. So like trying to incorporate that, another like passionate person that's, you know, our generation,
and,
you know? And,
yeah.
And it's not just me kind of leading the front on a little bit of the change.
Yeah.
That's what I would say would be the biggest impact on our operation kind of thing. So.
Well, it sounds like you guys there's going to be no shortage of ideas, right? Which I love that our generation is thinking like that. No shortage of ideas. It'll just be whether you got the hands to make all the ideas, you know, execute.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you want to make money and be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then have this way of life for, you know, future children, your family one day that can speak to Snyder Acres and why this generational brand year after year is still around.
Keep going. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, really appreciate the chat, Cody. I mean, I feel like you are speaking the experience of so many Canadian farmers out there. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how you mentioned about being scared about, you know, about a challenge ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people like yourself who have that type of optimism like you do and is clearly resourceful, willing to try new things, ask for help, be self-aware. I mean, that's, you are the future of Canadian agriculture. Not even the future. You are our agriculture system now.
Yeah.
But that's more the type of farmers that we're going to need. So hats off to you for thinking like that. And I'm glad that you went to England because you secured a wife and now she's Canadian. So I'm glad that you went and made the travel decisions you did and that where you landed. But thanks so much for the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I had fun. So
that's awesome. That's a wrap on this episode of the Country Guide podcast. Go to country-guide.ca for more great content to spark a conversation and subscribe to the weekly newsletter to be notified when our next podcast episode is available.